Hello, my name is Michael, and you're listening to Forever Sound Version, a video game music podcast. Do, dear friends, and thank you for hitting that play button on this episode number 43 of Forever Sound Version. The cheerful little tune that we just heard was Menu from the 1987 NES version of Konami's top-notch basketball game Double Dribble. The composer is Atsushi Fujio. Before we get our hands dirty with this episode's topic, I have a few items of business to get through. Firstly, I recently joined the Commodore 64 demo scene group Hokuto Force as a SID chip musician after spending some time learning the arcane ways of tracked music. I'm really looking forward to sharpening my skills and contributing some pieces to the Commodore 64 scene. If you'd like to hear what I've released so far, my demo scene name is Mibri, that is M-I-B-R-I. You'll be able to find me by visiting the Commodore 64 database at csdb.dk. Now, I'm producing this episode right at the start of March, and that means that my stateside VGM podcasting brother-in-arms, The Dyad, is celebrating the one-year anniversary of his show, so many congratulations to him. If you haven't given his show a listen yet, then I suggest you do so right now. Or maybe wait until you finish this episode, I guess. Finally, the always fantastic Rhythm and Pixels video game music podcast has recently started a YouTube-based 24-hour radio station that plays nothing but jams from games released on 8-bit and 16-bit systems. Rob and Pernell were kind enough to reach out to me asking if I'd like to contribute a guest playlist, which, of course, I was very happy to do so. So check it out, and you might hear some tunes from the Forever Sound Version Hottest Tracks list. All of the tracks on this list have either featured on this show before, or are highly likely to appear on a future episode. Alright, let's get stuck into our topic now. The Nintendo Entertainment System, known in Japan as the Family Computer, or Famicom for short. This 8-bit home console was an absolutely massive deal in Japan, where it was released in 1983, and North America, where it was released in 1985, selling almost 62 million units worldwide. The NES was Nintendo's very first attempt at designing and manufacturing a home console, after systems by companies such as Atari and Coleco had demonstrated that there was an appetite for video games outside of the arcades. That said, the NES came into being in the aftermath of the video game crash of 1983, which had a lot to do with the video games market being saturated with too many companies trying to get in on the action, releasing an overabundance of often dubious titles. Why did Nintendo succeed then? Well, I would suggest that the answer to this question is, in a word, quality. Nintendo's staff were legendarily talented in the areas of games design, programming, graphics, and of course music, and a stringent policy was instigated where third-party companies could not release games for the NES without Nintendo's approval. They weren't prepared to allow just any old junk to be played on their creation. No quick bucks. The Wild West years of video games were fizzling out as the new benchmark was set by the ambitious Japanese company. I realise that a sizeable number of my listeners probably already know this story inside out. American friends, I'm looking at you here. So why am I bothering to tell it? It's kind of for my non-US listeners. The simple fact is that the NES was not quite as big here in the UK as it was in America and Japan. Yes, of course, Mario was something of a household name here, but I would contend that this was maybe more down to his appearance in Nintendo's arcade smash Donkey Kong than the classic NES platformer Super Mario Bros. For most people in my corner of the world during the 1980s, gaming outside of the arcades meant playing on 8-bit home computer systems like the ZX Spectrum, Commodore 64, Amstrad CPC and BBC Micro. Of course, we did have the Atari consoles and the ColecoVision and the NES available here too, but we just loved our computers. Consoles didn't dominate the home market here until we started getting the Sega Mega Drive and the Super Nintendo. So, with all of that said, I only had one friend who owned an NES. When you consider that something like 30% of American households had an NES by 1990, you can see how my roots are significantly different to those of someone who grew up in the States. After all of that waffling, I'm going to need a drink of water, so let's have some more music. Here's Running Around from the 1990 NES title River City Ransom, composed by Kazuo Sawa, a righteous slice of chiptune rock and roll replete with frenetic noise channel percussion and blistering lead lines. After that, we'll hear Stage 1 from Power Blade 2, composed by Kunio Yamashita. That was Running Around from River City Ransom and Stage 1 from Power Blade 2. Released in 1992, Power Blade 2 is the latest game that I'll be featuring in this episode. The bass line on this tune is, no joke, really funky stuff to get this game started right. The setting of this game is interesting. The introduction text reads as follows: December 24th, 2200. The Delta Foundation, a weapons research company, developed a new cyborg soldier. The US president was told that if the government didn't buy it within the week, they would sell it to another government, which would pose a threat if it falls into the hands of a hostile government. Nova is given a secret mission from the Department of Defense to destroy the Delta Foundation. Ah yes, cyborg soldiers. You just can't go wrong with cyborg soldiers. On to some technical details of the NES now. The NES produces sound by way of its APU, which stands for Audio Processing Unit. It does exactly what it says on the tin. The APU works across 5 channels, 2 for pulse waves for your classic 8-bit chiptune sounds, 1 for triangle waves, 1 for noise waves for your drum sounds, and a DMC, that is Delta Modulation Channel, for playing lo-fi samples. So this hardware is versatile, and it continues to be very popular with chiptune musicians through platforms like Famitracker. We're about to have a double feature from a true classic now, Bad Dudes, aka Bad Dudes vs. Dragon Ninja, released in 1990 by the arcade kings of yesteryear, Data East. Are you a bad enough dude to rescue the president? Let's find out as I subject your tender ears to the tracks, stages 1, 3, 4, 6, and 7, and stages 2 and 5, composed by Masaki Iwasaki, Shogo Sakai, Takafumi Miura, Yuji Suzuki, Yusuke Takahama, and Ai Uchida. Hey dudes, Thanks for rescuing me. Let's go for a burger. Ha 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 ha. Speaking of meat products, that last track is most certainly meaty, cramming in some tasty percussive elements, harmonising lead lines, and some unorthodox scrambled tonic elements in the refrain. Time for something altogether lighter. Here's the track Balloon Trip from Balloon Fight, released on the NES in 1986. The composer is Hirokazu Tanaka, a real Nintendo legend with music credits on titles like Metroid, Super Mario Land, and Earthbound. A quick look at his biographical details reveals that he's a pretty serious music fan, citing influences such as Frank Zappa, The Slits, A Tribe Called Quest, and My Bloody Valentine. Now I'm just going to try and imagine a really dense shoegaze version of this next tune. Here it is, Balloon Trip from Balloon Fight. After that, we'll have Title from Solstice, The Quest for the Staff of Demnos, composed by Tim Follin. Balloon Trip from Balloon Fight, followed by Title from Solstice, The Quest for the Staff of Demnos there. It's sort of uncanny to me to hear such extreme use of arpeggios, normally understood as the domain of Western VGM, coming out of Nintendo's 8-bit hardware here. But it's very welcome. Tim Follin does very well to realise what may or may not be an English folk flavour alongside some almost prog rock devices. This is one of those tunes that takes you on a trip. A good trip. Solstice, The Quest for the Staff of Demnos is a 1990 isometric adventure game that takes cues from classic British-made adventure games that came out on the 8-bit computers of the 1980s, like Nightlaw for instance. To be totally honest, I don't really have the time and patience to play through games like this these days, but I can definitely appreciate the intricacies of their design quirks and graphics. Next up is a soundtrack that I discovered fairly recently, Shatterhand, released in 1991. If you haven't heard anything from this game before, you're in for a treat. Everything I love about early 90s Japanese VGM is present and correct here. Watertight arrangements, rhythmic sophistication, and soaring heroic melodies. Here's Area A and Area C, composed by Iku Mizutani. so good, that last one. Area A and Area C from Shatterhand. If I were you, dear listener, I would be rewinding this podcast back a couple of minutes to bump Area C again. The subtle echo effect on the main melody voice is just fantastic, and every single element is in constant motion, from the snare drums to the bass lines. Unexpectedly funky business. In 1991, the American magazine GamePro wrote, "Shatterhand's rock'em sock'em action leaves all those other NES Slugger Out carts in a crippled heap. Take yourself to the brink once again and try your hand at Shatterhand." That's some bellicose language there, and high praise indeed. There's no doubt in my mind that this game's critical success was bolstered by its tunes. How could it not have been? Alright, here's a pair of picks that will surprise absolutely no one. I had to do it. I had to go with some Mega Man. There are quite a few Mega Man titles to choose from, but I'm going with my favourite, and perhaps the most obvious and celebrated. Mega Man 2. Because in this VGM podcast game, you know, you have to drop some stone-cold classics every now and then. I'm not prepared to completely mire myself in Esoterica, as tempting as it might be. My love for this soundtrack was reignited recently by a video of a live performance by the band Bit Brigade at MAGFest 10 back in 2012, where they played some very rocking renditions of the game's tunes whilst someone completed the game on stage with them. You can check out Bit Brigade's work by visiting bitbrigade.com. I really do recommend that Mega Man 2 display. Let's get into my picks. I'm going with Woodman Stage and Airman Stage, composed by Takashi Tateishi. Thank you. just had Woodman Stage and Airman Stage from Mega Man 2 on the Nintendo Entertainment System. In a 2015 interview with the composer Takashi Tateishi, in which he is asked about his work on Mega Man 2, he reflects, "There weren't a lot of games with rock motifs at the time. If you look at Super Mario, that's more like classical music, right? So with Mega Man 2, I did imagine as if the music would be played by a guitar. And at the time, there wasn't anyone at Capcom who really did band-type classical music. I was actually quite happy to be involved with Mega Man 2, as I loved the first game. But my first few attempts at creating songs were rejected by Kitamura-san, the game's director, for making music that sounded too cute. I was asked to make cooler music. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm certain that he nailed that in the end. It doesn't get much cooler than Airman." I'm just about ready to wind this episode up. After all of those action-packed tracks, I might need a quick lie down. If you'd like to get in touch with me, you can email me at foreversoundversion@gmail.com. You can like this podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/foreversoundversion. And you can follow me on Twitter as well. The handle is FSVpodcast. Thanks a lot for listening, and whoever you are, wherever you are, stay frosty out there. Take care of yourself, stick up for your friends, and remember that we are all worthy of happiness and peace. To play us out, here's Entryway from Shadowgate, composed by Hiroyuki Masuno. All the best for now.